Hey guys, my first episode. Today we're going to talk about the voyage to the moon and the great train robbery. So I'm going to start off by talking about both their productions and critical response at the time, if possible. So let's get into it. Voyage to the Moon is a movie from 1902, the French movie. Well, not really. I mean, I'm about to say not really inventive. No, it's very inventive, I guess. I don't know. I've never seen it. Voyage to the Moon. Wait, hold on, sorry. Anyways. Nope. I wonder why I messed up. So, anyways, the reason I'm starting to do this, I'm doing this over a few films I've been trying to see. Problems, technical difficulties. So, I figure we'll start off. We'll probably start off with this. Next week will be a The Birth of a Nation, along with a few other movies. Alright, let's get into this. I'm sorry, I'm trying to find my script. A Trip to the Moon, the 1902 French adventure film, directed by Georges Méliès, inspired by a wide variety of sources, including Jules Verne and novels From the Earth to the Moon and Around the Moon. It features an ensemble cast of French theatrical performers, led by Méliès himself, in the main role of Professor Bonafilius, and is filmed in the overtly theatrical style for which Méliès became famous. So, directed, produced, and written by Georges Méliès, stars Georges Méliès, of course, Minette Bernin, Francis Lament, Harlan, I'm making sure something. I'm sorry. Francis Lament and Hinderlar, Den Loring, cinematography by Thierry Michelin and Lucan Thurn. The production company is Star Film Company. Release date was on September 1st of 1802. Running time depends on what are you watching. If you're watching 12 frames a second, it will last about 18 minutes. 14 frames a second means 16 minutes. And then 24 frames a second means 9 minutes. It's a French movie. It's silent and its budget is about $10,000 in French pound. The film is internationally popular success on its release and was extensively pirated by other studios, especially in the United States. Its unusual length, lavish production values, inventive special effects, and emphasis on storytelling were markedly influential on other filmmakers and ultimately on the development of narrative films as a whole. Scholars also have commented upon the film's extensive use of pedophysical and interpretive satire, as well as its wide influence on later filmmakers and artistic significance on the French theatrical folie tradition. Although the film disappeared into obscurity after Méliès' retirement from the film industry, it was rediscovered in 1930 when Méliès' importance to the history of cinema was beginning to be recognized by film devotees. The original hand-color print was discovered in 1993 and restored in 2011. A Trip to the Moon is named as one of the 100 greatest films of the 20th century by the Village Voice, ranked 84th. The film remains best known of the 100 films made by Méliès. The moment when the capsule lands on the moon's eye remains one of the most iconic and frequently referenced images in the history of cinema. It's widely regarded as the earliest example of science fiction film genre and more generally one of the most influential films in cinema history. So, first I'm just going to talk about the production, release, and receptions, and then later on I'll talk about the plot, the style, the themes, the rediscovery, and also the legacy for this film, specifically. So, the production, when asked in 1930 what inspired him for A Trip to the Moon, Méliès credited Jules Verne's novels from the from Jules Verne's 1965 novel From the Earth from the Moon, and it is 1870 novel Around the Moon. Cinema historians, the mid-20th century French writer Georges Salon, first among them, has frequently suggested H.G. Wells' 1901 book, The First Man in the Moon. First Men in the Moon, sorry. A French translation of which was published a few months before Méliès made a film, as another likely influence. Sadoul argued that the first half of the film, up to the shooting of the projectiles, derived from Verne, and that the second half, the traveler's adventures on and in the moon, is derived from Wells. In addition to these literary sources, various film scholars have suggested that Méliès was heavily influenced by other works, especially Goscinny's Offenbach's operetta Le Voyage dans la Lune, an unauthorized parody of Verne's novels, and the trip to the moon attraction at the 1901 Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York. The French film historian Truffaut L'Observer hypothesized that Méliès threw up both of these works, but in different ways. He appears to have taken the structure of the film, A Trip to the Moon, A Moulin and an Encounter with the Extraterrestrial, the Form D, Underground Trek, An Interview with the Man in the Moon, and Brutal Return to Structure of the film, and Return to Reality Back on Earth, directly from the 1901 attraction, but also incorporated many plot elements, including the presence of six astronomers with pseudo-sit scientific names and telescopes that transformed into stools. I mean, what? No, why? That's weird. A man shot cannon mounted above the ground. A scene in which the moon appears to approach the viewers, a linear snowstorm, an Earth Rise scene, and umbrella-wielding travelers. Why did that happen? I don't know. Not to mention the patriotic tone of the film from Offenbach operetta. Tell me. As a science writer, Ron Miller notes, A Trip to the Moon is one of the most complex films that Méliès have ever made and employed every trick he learned or invented. It was his longest film at the time. Both the budget and the film duration was unusually lavish, costing 10,000 Frankish or French money. Okay, let's call it French money to make and taking 3 months to complete. The camera operators were Thermont Macquiot and Lucien Tanguy. Who worked on a daily basis with Méliès as salaried employees for the Star Film Company. In addition for their work as cameramen, Méliès operators also did odd jobs for the company, such as developing film, helping to set up scenery, another salary operator. Racine Lamarte appeared on screen as a marine officer. By contrast, Méliès hired his actors on a film-by-film basis, drawing from talented individuals in the Parisian theatrical world, which he had made connections. They were paid one Louis d'Or per day, a considerably higher salary than that offered by the competitors, and a full free meal at noon with Méliès. Méliès' film studio, which he had built in the Motelier Saint-Denis in 1897, with a greenhouse-like building with glass walls and a glass ceiling to let in as much sunlight as possible, a concept used by most still photography studios in the 1860s onward, which built the same dimensions as Méliès' own Théâtre Robin d'Arôme, 13.5 by 6.6 meters. Throughout his film career, Méliès worked on the strict schedule of planning films in the morning, filming scenes during the brightest hour of the day, tending to the film to the lab territory in the theater Robert Houdin in the late afternoon, and tending performances at Parisian theaters in the evening. According to the Méliès recollections, although much of the unusual cost of the trip to the moon was due to the mechanically operated scenery and the Slink costumes in particular, which were made for the film using cardboard and carmenes. Méliès himself sculpted prototypes for the heads and feet and kneecaps and pieces in terracotta, and created plaster molds for them. A specialist in matchmaking used those models molds to produce cardboard versions of the actors to wear. One of the backdrops of the film, showing inside a glass workshop in which space the capsule was built, was painted to look like the actual glass roof of the studio in which the film was made. Interesting. Many of the special effects in the trip to the moon, oh lord, it's going to take me a long time, as numerous other released films were created using the substitution splice technology, in which the camera operator stopped filming long enough for something on screen to be altered, added, or taken away. Milius carefully spliced the resulting shots together to create apparently magical effects, such as the transformation of the astrometer, telescopes into stools, I don't know, or the disappearance of the exploding knights in the puff of smoke. Oh my god, what the heck? Other effects were created using theatrical means, such as stage machinery, prayer techniques. The film also featured traditional dissolves. The presidential tracking shot, in which a camera appears to be to approach the man in the moon, was approached using an effect Mills has invented the previous year for the film, a man with a rubber head. Rather than attempting to move his way the camera towards the actor, he set a pulley operated chair upon a rift fitting ramp, placed the actor covered up the neck in black velvet on a chair, and pulled him towards the camera. In addition to technical practicality, this technique also allowed Mills to control the placement of the face within the frame to a much greater degree of specificity than moving his camera around. A substitution splice allowed a model capsule to suddenly appear in the eye of the actor playing the moon, completing the shot. Another notable sequence in the film were plunged with the capsule into real ocean waves filmed on location, was created through multiple exposures with the shot of the capsule falling in front of a black background superimposed upon the footage of the ocean. The shot was followed by underwater glimpses of the capsule floating back to the surface, creating by combining a moving cardboard cutout of the capsule within the aquarium containing tadpoles and air jets. The descent of the capsule from the moon was covered in four shots, taking about 20 seconds to film. That's film time. Covering at least 4% of release output, including major films such as Kingdom of the Fairies, The Impossible Voyage, and The Barber of Seville. Some prints of a trip to the moon is usually hand colored by Elizabeth Tuller, coloring lab in Paris. Tuller was a former colorist of glass and celluloid projects, directed a studio of 200 people painting daily on film stock with brushes. In the eyes she chose, and specifically in the colors she chose, and specifically, each worker was assigned a different color, and the assembly line was more than 20 separate colors often used for a single film. On average, Tuller Labs produced about 60 hand color copies of a film. Music. Although Mealy's films were silent, they were not intended to be seen silently. Exhibitors used a bramonardu or narrator to explain the story as it unfolds on the screen, accompanied by sound effects and live music. Mealy himself took several interest in musical accompaniment for his films and prepared a special film score for several of them, including The Kingdom of the Fairies and The Barber of Seville. However, Milius never required a specific musical score to be used with any films, allowing exhibitors freedom to choose whatever the competent name feel most suitable. When the film screened at the Olympia Music Hall in Paris in 1902, an original film score was reportedly written for it. In 1903, the English composer Eliza Reed published a piano piece called A Trip to the Moon, Cosmic Descriptive Fantasy. Fantasia. Sorry. Which follows Milius' film scene by scene, and may have been used as the score for the film. It may have been commissioned by Milius himself, who likely met Reed on one of his trips to England. Most recent composers include who have recorded scores for A Trip to the Moon include Nicholas Golden and Jean Bernard Denuck of Air for 2011 restoration. Frederick Hodges, Robert Israel, Eric Lynn Jennett, and Lawrence Lazarin, a great-great-grandson of Mealy's, Jeff Mills, Donald Sutherland, and Victor Young for an abridged print version as a prologue to the film, 1956 film, Around the World, 80 Days. Sorry, I'm being distracted. Release. These episodes should be longer than I thought they were. They were. I mean, 20 minutes on one film. Millie's, who begun A Trip on the Moon in May of 1902, finished the film in August of that year, began selling prints for its distribution in the same month. From September through December of 1902, a hand-colored print of Trip to the Moon was screened at Mills Theatre Robert Houdon in Paris. Film was shown after Saturday and Thursday Maritime performances by Millie's colleagues and fellow magician Jules Eugene Larrys, who appeared as the leader of the parade in two final scenes. Millie's solid black and white cut and color prints of the film through his Star Film Company were filmed with the sign of the catalog number 399 through 411 and given the descriptive subtitles Piece of Grand Spectre in Thirty Tarpu. Rich black and white prints sold for $560 French dollars and hand color prints for $1,000 French dollars. Millie also sold the film indirectly through Charles Urban's Warwack Trading Company in London. Many circumstances surrounding the film, including its unusual budget, length, and production time, as well as the similarities to 1901 New York attraction, indicate that Mills was especially keen to release the film in the United States. Because of the rampant film privacy, Mills never received most of the profits of the popular film. One account argued reports that Millie sold a print of the film to the Paris photographer Charles Racine, who used in an Algiers theater under strict stipulation that the print only be shown in Algeria. Getting sold the print and various other Millie's films to Edison Manufacturing Company employee offered a Algiers who sent them directly to Edison's laboratory to be duplicated and sold by Vistagraph. Copies of the print spread to other films and by 1904, Sigmund Lehman, the Sigmund Poloscope Company, and Edison were all redistributing it. Edison's print of the film was taken off in a hand-colored version and available at a higher price, just as Mills had done. Mills had often uncredited altogether for the first 6 months of the film distribution. The only American exhibitor to credit Mills in the advertisements for the film was Thomas Lincoln Talley, who he chose film as the inaugural presentation of his Electric Theater. In order to combat the film, oh my god, this is long. The film, the privacy, it had become clear that the reason of A Trip to the Moon, Mills opened an American branch of Star Film Company, directed by his brother Gaston, ooh, that's a heck of a name right there, Mills in New York in 1903. Often, this office was designed to sell Mills' film directly and protect them by registering them under United States copyright. The introduction of the English language edition of the Star Film Company catalog announced an opening a factory in office in New York. We are prepared to determine energetically to pursue all the counterfeiters and pirates. We will not speak twice, we will act. In addition to opening the American skip all that. Reception, Trip to the Moon is one of the most popular films of the past few years. First few years of 23 rivaled by only a small handful of films. Trip to the Moon spent especially large enthusiasm in New York. And the film, finally, Mills often one such exhibitor, but our print film screen free to pause from the very first showing. So enthusiastic that film, fairgoers kept the theater packed until midnight. Wow. So, and we're going to go over quickly what the other film is called The Great, which, oh god, no, The Great Train Robbery from 1903. It's a American short Western film written, produced, and directed by Edward S. Porter of Warner Edison Studios. Cameraman. Actors in the movie include Alfred C. Abbey, who we actually just talked about, Bronco Billy, Anderson, we're in that last name, and Justice D. Barnes. Oh my god, that's a heck of a name. Although there were no credits, the Western was filmed in Milltown, New Jersey. A film inspired by Scott Mills' 1886 stage play, and may also have been inspired by the 1900 a train robbery perpetrated by Butch Cassidy. The film runs at 12 minutes. It's a $150 movie. At 12 minutes long, the train robbery, it's considered a milestone film making, expanding on Potter's previous work, A Life on an American Fireman. The film used a number of unconventional techniques, including composite editing, on-location shooting, and frequent camera movement. The film is one of the earliest to use techniques of cross-cutting, in which two scenes are shown to be occurring simultaneously, but in both locations. But in different locations, I'm sorry. Some prints were also hand-colored in certain scenes. Techniques used in The Great Train Robbery inspired those used in Frank Matusow's British film with Daring Daylight Burglary, released earlier in the year. Film historians now largely considered The Great Train Robbery to be America's first action film and the first Western film with a recognizable form. In 1990, The Great Train Robbery was selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry by Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. So, we just talked about how good those movies were. We're about to watch these movies, see how good they are. Sorry this part took so long, I was not expecting it. Next time, I think next episode, we'll just go over some basic things, maybe. I don't know. This is a developing podcast. We'll develop as we go. Anyways, I'll be back. We'll finish up the podcast. I'll give you a brief synopsis of both stories. And then, we'll talk about it, see what I thought about it. Does it hold up today, I guess? The reason I say that, if it holds up today, hey, guess what, it holds up today, but it doesn't today, then that's sad. But I think both these movies will hold up. They're not going to be oh my, they're mind-blowing. No, they're still good effects and whatnot. I don't know. It's the first time watching movies this old, so we're in it together, I guess. Well, we'll be right back in about, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, I don't know. Both these movies aren't really that long, so about 30 minutes and then 10 minutes of talking about how good they were, how bad they were, or whatnot. Alright, bye. Well, I'm back after watching them. So I'm going to start off with A Trip to the Moon. I thought it was a great comedy. It's a science fiction movie through and through, but it's a great comedy too. It does have some bad effects, especially along the lines of cutting. They were doing a telescope turns into a stool scene. And they cut a little bit too early, and he noticed the effect. Just a little bit. I'm not mad at him for that. It's 1902, and they couldn't have done any better. That's stupid. Some shots do linger a little bit. Just a tad bit. You don't know it unless you're really looking into it, but it lingers just a tad bit. The moon, when you first see it, it looks really mad and it's kind of scary. Just the effects back then, they most of the time don't look happy, they don't look good, they look kind of creepy. There's some effect. And also, on the moon, it's a fantastic effect. You don't even know it's the moon until you see it. And they had this operation thing that they just pulled a person playing the moon up to the camera because the camera can't really be moved. So that was cool. The aliens in the movie, I think they're called Cementites. One of the first ones you meet, they do a leg up in the air move and like all the way up there, holding up to their heads and they're what? And then they get killed. Through one of the stupidest ways I have ever seen in a film. And just touching them with an umbrella turns into smoke. So one of the other great effects in the movie is actually no, it's not an effect, it's more of a transition. There's two transitions I thought were fabulous in the movie. The first one is when they're sleeping. I think it was like six scientists were there. Anyways, they're sleeping there and on the moon, and the stars above them, which were played by girls because, well, why not, I guess. They started to, move and turn into some turns into people pointing towards a cave when they wake up. Another great transition is when the mushroom turns into an when the umbrella turns into a mushroom. That was funny. The one thing I do have to ask about continuity wise is what happened to the ship. The ship just straight up and disappears for lengths of time, and then pops up in an area I'd never seen before in the movie at all. Beyond that, I have nothing really much to say because this movie only runs at 12 minutes. I don't have time to get to the characters because I don't know any of the characters at all. Anyways, I give this movie a 9 out of 10. Next one, The Great Train Robbery. I hated this movie. I'm gonna go through some of the best things. They threw a guy off a train in the very beginning, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And also, they shot a guy off the horse, which is nice. But there's a lot of stupid stuff in this movie. So I thought some of the stunts were bad. And even then, it's kind of like you could tell it's bad. I mean, the gunshots, I'm not gonna get into the gunshots because they're shooting them. They're like, ugh, they're being all dramatic and stuff. I'm not mad at them for that because that's the 1900s and they can't really do anything about it. That the sh I forgot what. The middle section is completely boring. There's supposed to be a story where they're like, oh, they think it was this guy, they shot him, and then for some reason they're just dancing. I don't know. Some shots lingered on way too long. There's shot of them killing a guy, throwing him off the train, and then they just kind of hop on. The conductor's like, hey, pull us over, and like, stop. Switch to another position. Show us the action. Don't show us faraway view. Show us the real action. It's really boring. I mean, for a 12-minute short, really and truly, that's what it is. It's really boring. I mean, you're sitting here and you're like, why does this exist in the context of the movie? Especially that stupid dance. You know what I mean? I hate that dancing. It had some of the worst not the worst acting I've ever seen. I have to give that to something else. We'll talk about that movie when I want to talk about it. Oh my god, I'm gonna love talking about a certain movie. I'm not gonna tell. I'm not gonna ruin it. So there's a scene with the man that got knocked out at the beginning of the movie. So they can get on the train. He gets knocked out, and then around the end of the movie, he gets up and he's handcuffed from behind, and he moves his hand. Even though he's handcuffed, he's moving his hands onto his stool to help him get up. And you can notice it's clear as day. I know back then you can't really reshoot it, I understand that, but it's really, really boring and it's really bad to me. Try to get some of the bad stuff before I get to the. There's some stupid stuff, and I really have to say that. There's one camera shot I hate in that movie. They're riding away on horses, and the camera's kind of like up on a hill, and it can't like pan and tilt at the same time, so the pan and then they tilt down like really fast and it's like really jarring, which is really bad. I didn't like that. Nothing about this movie makes sense. The movie's boring at the 3 minute mark. By the 3 minute mark, the guy at the beginning is a bad actor. The dummy. When they threw the guy off the train, they cut to a dummy, which is fine. I understand why they had to, but it's really obvious it's a dummy. And I'm not mad at them. I'm just mad about that. The movie overall not that great, except for two things that were revolutionary at the time. And also, I like to state that there's two other good things about it beyond the dummy being thrown from the train. Two revolutionary things. Shots actually moving around. That blew everybody's mind back in 1903. But you look at it now, you're like, so story editing. That's what they call it. Story editing is pretty much just editing two different things at different locations, pretty much making one story. It's everyone uses it nowadays, but back then they didn't really know how to make a story, so it doesn't really make sense the context of the story. Anyways, this movie gets me our first 5 out of 10. Well, A Trip to the Moon gets 9 out of 10. And I'll be back next week with Birth of a Nation, and then might do mini episodes between then and there, here and there, everywhere. Reviewing whatever I see come across. I think it's gonna be this time. I think it might be season 2 of Abstract and The Politician. Who knows? Maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, see you guys next time, or hear listen. See you guys, or hear you guys, or whatever. I don't know. Bye. Well, I'm back after watching them. So I'm going to start off with A Trip to the Moon. I thought it was a great comedy. It's a science fiction movie through and through, but it's a great comedy too. It does have some bad effects, especially along the lines of like cutting. They were doing a telescope turns into a stool scene, and they cut a little bit too early, and he noticed the effect, just a little bit. I'm not mad at him for that. It's 1902, and they couldn't have done any better. That's stupid. Some shots do linger a little bit, just a tad bit. You don't know it unless you're really looking into it, but it lingers just a tad bit. The moon, when you first see it, it looks really mad and it's kind of scary. Just the effects back then, they most of the time don't look like happy, they don't look good, they look kind of creepy. There's some effect. And also on the moon, it's a fantastic effect. You don't even know it's the moon until you see it, and they had this operation thing that they just pulled a person playing the moon up to the camera because the camera can't really be moved. So that was cool. The aliens in the movie, I think they're called Cementites. One of the first ones you meet, they do like a leg up in the air move, and it's like all the way up there, like holding up to their heads, and they're like, what? And then they get killed. Through one of the stupidest ways I have ever seen in a film. And just like touching them with an umbrella turns them to smoke. So one of the other great effects in the movie is, actually, no, it's not an effect, it's more of a transition. There's two transitions I thought were fabulous in the movie. The first one is when they're sleeping. I think it was like 6 scientists were there. Anyways, they're sleeping there and on the moon. And the stars above them, which were played by girls, because, well, why not, I guess. They started to, move and turn into some, turns into people pointing towards a cave when they wake up. Another great transition is when the umbrella turns into a mushroom. That was funny. The one thing I do have to ask about continuity wise is what happened to the ship. The ship just straight up and disappears for lengths of time, and then pops up in an area I'd never seen before in the movie at all. Beyond that, I have nothing really much to say because this movie only runs at 12 minutes. I don't have time to get to the characters because I don't know any of the characters at all. Anyways, I give this movie a 9 out of 10. Next one, The Great Train Robbery. I hated this movie. I'm gonna go through some of the best things. They threw a guy off a train in the very beginning, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And also, they shot a guy off the horse, which is nice. But there's a lot of stupid stuff in this movie. So I thought some of the stunts were bad. And even then, it's kind of like you could tell it's bad. I mean, the gunshots, I'm not gonna get into the gunshots because they're shooting them. They're like, ugh, they're being all dramatic and stuff. I'm not mad at them for that because that's the 1900s and they can't really do anything about it. That the sh I forgot what. The middle section is completely boring. There's supposed to be a story where they're like, oh, they think it was this guy, they shot him, and then for some reason they're just dancing. I don't know. Some shots lingered on way too long. There's shot of them killing a guy, throwing him off the train, and then they just kind of hop on. The conductor's like, hey, pull us over. I'm like, stop. Switch to another position. Show us the action. Don't show us far away view. Show us the real action. It's really boring. I mean, for a 12-minute short, really and truly, that's what it is. It's really boring. I mean, you're sitting here and you're like, why does this exist in the context of the movie? Especially that stupid dance. You know what I mean? I hate that dancing. It has some of the worst not the worst acting I've ever seen. I have to give that to something else. We'll talk about that movie when I want to talk about it. Oh my god, I'm gonna love talking about a certain movie. I'm not gonna tell. We're not gonna ruin it. So there's a scene with the man that got knocked out at the beginning of the movie. So they can get on the train. He gets knocked out, and then around the end of the movie, he gets up, and he's handcuffed from behind, and he moves his hand. Even though he's handcuffed, he's moving his hands onto his stool to help him get up. And you can notice it's clear as day. I know back then you can't really reshoot it, I understand that, but it's really, really boring and it's really bad to me. Try to get some of the bad stuff before I get to the. There's some stupid stuff, and I really have to say that. There's one camera shot I hate in that movie. They're riding away on horses, and the camera's kind of like up on a hill, and it can't like pan and tilt at the same time, so the pan and then they tilt down like really fast, you know, like really jarring, which is really bad. I didn't like that. Nothing about this movie makes sense. The movie's boring at the 3 minute mark. About the 3 minute mark, the guy at the beginning is a bad actor. The dummy. When they threw the guy off the train, they cut to a dummy, which is fine. I understand why they had to, but it's really obvious it's a dummy. And I'm not mad at them. I'm just mad about that. It's doing overall not that great, except for two things that were revolutionary at the time. And also, I would like to state that, there's two other good things about it beyond the dummy being thrown from the train. Two revolutionary things. Shots actually moving around. That's blew everybody's mind back in 1903. But you know, you look at it now, you're like, also story editing. That's what they call it. Story editing is pretty much just editing just two different things at different locations, pretty much making one story. It's a cool. Everyone uses it nowadays, but back then they really know didn't really know how to make a story, so it doesn't really make sense the context of the story. Anyways, this movie gets me our first 5 out of 10. Well, A Trip to the Moon gets 9 out of 10. And I'll be back next week with Birth of a Nation, and then might do mini episodes between then and there, here and there, everywhere. Reviewing whatever I see come across. I think it's gonna be this time. I think it might be season 2 of Abstract and The Politician. Who knows? Maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, see you guys next time, or hear listen. See you guys, or hear you guys, or whatever. I don't know.